Submitted. And the next case is Sanchez v. Travelers, 24-1009. All right, we'll hear from the appellant whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Zachary Muggy, and I represent the appellant, Michael Sanchez. We've all heard the old adage that cheaters never win, right? But it takes a case like this one to maybe force us to take a step back and really question whether that is true. Because in reality, sometimes cheaters do win, but only if they get away with it. And that's why we're here. Travelers cheated in Michael Sanchez's workers' compensation claim. They wanted to avoid having to pay him benefits and provide him with medical care. And Mr. Sanchez brought a bad faith case against Travelers so they wouldn't get away with it. But unfortunately, Travelers was able to convince the district court down below that Mr. Sanchez is barred from even bringing his claim in the first place based on the doctrine of issue preclusion.
So if you're wrong about the effect of the dime in this case, do you lose?
No, Your Honor. That is just one of the reasons of many that the district court's ruling was an error. There are three main reasons that I'd like to address today as to why the district court's ruling was an error and must be reversed. And the first is that according to Colorado Supreme Court precedent in the Brodeur and Savio cases, workers' compensation claims are an entirely different species than a bad faith claim. And the language in Brodeur and Savio make clear that they're separate and distinct causes of action, and that the resolution of a workers' compensation claim does not have any bearing on the bad faith claim. It's to be resolved differently. And the reason for that is that the bad faith claim is brought under the duty of good faith and fair dealing, right? It's a long bedrock legal principle that all insurance companies must abide by the duty of good faith and fair dealing when they're handling a claim.
Well, wait a minute. You already lost me. You're arguing bad faith, and the issue before us is issue preclusion. That the matter, as far as the low back was concerned, was determined not to be a result of an injury. Now, bad faith is one thing, but court proceedings and rulings are another. As I read the briefs, this matter was determined by an ALJ. It then was appealed and went to the Colorado Court of Appeals, and cert was denied by the Colorado Supreme Court, which determined the issue that the low back injury was not a part of the injury suffered at work. Okay, that's not bad faith. That's just a plain ruling. So, to me, you're going to have to show me how issue preclusion in the one case, which argued that it was not a result of the injury, develops into some kind of bad faith. I mean, where am I missing this?
Happy to do so, Your Honor.
You better, because that's where I am.
Well, I appreciate you asking me that question then so that I could provide the answer. The bad faith came in the process, right? So the initial administrative law judge, I'll call him an ALJ, made a decision that the low back injury was not causally related to the work injury, right? We have an admitted work injury, and that's key. Compensability has already been conceded by Travelers and by the employer. So then the question becomes, was the low back causally related to the work accident? The ALJ initially said no, right? But we have to keep in mind the process that the parties went through before they got to that ALJ ruling. And one of the key facts in this case is that Mr. Sanchez was sent to a second opinion doctor, Dr. Kawasaki. And when Travelers sent Mr. Sanchez's medical records and other records to Dr. Kawasaki, you'll note that they omitted key records, documenting clearly the fact that Mr. Sanchez had indeed reported a low back injury immediately after the accident. Travelers kept those records from the second opinion doctor. The second opinion doctor, once he got those missing records, said, oh, I had not seen these before. I changed my mind. I now conclude that the low back injury was causally related. That report from Dr. Kawasaki, that corrected report, was not permitted into evidence in that first hearing with ALJ Kanisi. Travelers wouldn't let it in. And then...
Well, they made an objection.
Wouldn't let it in.
I'm sorry?
The ALJ wouldn't let it in. Travelers objected. Travelers didn't make the decision. The ALJ did.
That's correct. But Travelers had the report, right? So Travelers knew that the second opinion doctor had changed his mind, but then took advantage of the fact that ALJ Kanisi was not aware of that because the document didn't come into evidence. So, Your Honor, to answer your question squarely, where does the bad faith come? If you get an outcome in your favor, that's fine. But the process matters. How you go about achieving that result matters. You can't cheat. You can't hide documents. You can't take advantage of errors. You can't ignore your own records.
I don't think you argued, and I don't think you want to argue, do you, that the ALJ got it wrong? I mean, this went through the state appellate process. I mean, Rooker versus Feldman would preclude us from relitigating the correctness of the state court's affirmance of the ALJ's decision. As I understand, that's not your argument.
Correct.
All right. So with your argument, I understand you presented it extremely well in your briefing, is, well, all of the bad faith preceded the ALJ's decision and postdated the
Correct.
ALJ's decision. And so I think you would agree, would you not, that a bad faith claim can be predicated on the incorrectness of an insurance denial. In other words, bad faith, breach of an insurance contract, we see it all the time, right?
That's right.
And in that case, it would be a coterminous inquiry, right? If that were the nature of the claim here, hypothetically, and the ALJ decided, the ALJ decided that the workers' comp claim was correctly denied, there certainly would not be bad faith in denying the claim because there was already an enforceable adjudication that we can't relitigate under Rooker versus Feldman that denial was correct, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think this case is different because what we're saying was the bad faith conduct is what influenced the ALJ decision in the first place. The ALJ's ruling was the byproduct of the bad faith, of the ignoring the records, of the totally tainting the second opinion.
So you're not arguing that he had emotional distress or some other, even if the claim was correctly denied, he had some other damage like emotional distress. There was a delay that influenced him. Your only argument for damages for bad faith and the underlying act was the improper denial of benefits because the ALJ got it wrong because of what their insidious cheating, right?
No, Your Honor. Our damages are specific to the damage caused by the bad faith. The compensability issue has since been resolved. ALJ Kanisi's order was rendered moot when the dime made his decision on MMI, right, maximum medical improvement, and causation are inextricably intertwined in our dime opinion, which as a matter of law says the dime opinion controls ALJ Kanisi's previous ruling is now moot. The damages that we seek on our bad faith claim come from the fact that because Travelers cheated in the process, Mr. Sanchez ended up getting fired from his job. He didn't get medical benefits.
So all of the bad faith was in denying the claim?
No, Your Honor. The bad faith was in tainting the process by which the initial ALJ made his ruling.
Okay. Now, here's my last question, and then I will be quiet. So, in district court, when you responded to the summary judgment motion on pages 14 and 15, even with a magnifying glass, where can I find any hint of such an argument?
That the damages that we seek are stemming from the bad faith conduct and not the compensatory?
No, you certainly say just on a 64,000 foot level, yeah, they can be independent. But where in district court on those two pages, I mean, it's just two pages where you addressed it, where can I find an argument that, well, the ALJ wouldn't have denied the benefits had they not withheld the information from Dr. Kawasaki on the first report, or that they misled the ALJ into withholding the second Kawasaki report, or any of this stuff that you have laid out extraordinarily well to us. I just don't know where the district judge had the same benefit that we did.
Well, Your Honor, I don't have the time to go through that entire brief right now, but I do think we laid it out in the extensive fact section, and then the arguments were twofold, right? The arguments were Brodeur and Savio bar this argument as a matter of law, because under binding precedent from our Colorado Supreme Court, it says these are different claims, and that the resolution of the workers' compensation claim does not impact the resolution of a bad faith claim. They're to be treated entirely separately. And that language is clear. So I did make that point, Your Honor, as best I could with the limited, I had 20 pages. And perhaps in hindsight, I should have asked for more. But I made the argument the best we could to say the law says that the workers' compensation claim doesn't have a bearing on the bad faith claim because they're about two separate things.
In your opinion, you could have won before the ALJ and still have your bad faith claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. The two are entirely separate. You can have both. You can have a finding, even if the process wasn't tainted and the ALJ ruled against my client, or if the process was tainted, then it gives rise to a separate bad faith claim, and that's what's happened here. So there are three reasons why, as we've cited in the brief, that we believe the district court's ruling must be reversed. And the first is that it doesn't even apply. Issue preclusion doesn't even apply because of the binding precedent in Brodeur and Savio, which says, as a matter of law, these are separate claims. They're to be treated separately. The resolutions do not depend on one another. And the second reason is the dime, which Judge Carlson, you talked about. When you have a dime, even if it came after the ALJ decision, which is an unusual turn of events, I would say, that dime controls. And that's as a matter of statute. Because the dime's opinion went to MMI, and the MMI decision said he's not at MMI because his lower back injury was causally related to the work accident and has not been treated, the dime's opinion is given presumptive weight.
If this was a lost time claim.
And it is a lost time claim, Your Honor.
Did you argue that in district court?
Yes, Your Honor.
That it was a lost time claim? Because the only place was in that footnote.
You're right.
Did you argue in that footnote that this was a lost time claim?
Well, the footnote argues that the decision belonged to the dime, and it relates back to one of the factual allegations, which has record support. There's an email that Mr. Sanchez sent the traveler's adjuster saying, you got to help me. Dr. McCauley won't help me. I've had to use all my personal time. He even said that week he had to take 4 days of his own vacation time because he couldn't go to work. So that's the reason it's not a lost time claim, right? It's circular. It all comes back to travelers misclassifying or reclassifying the injury as a mid-back injury and then saying it's not work-related, therefore the time you take off is not covered, it's vacation time. It's this perfect circle, right? Mike Sanchez can't win. So
what's the closest case to yours for under Colorado law for bad faith? Because here's what I'm thinking about. If I've got a lawsuit, say this wasn't in work comp court, say it was in district court, and you have some, a case against an insurance company over the roof of your house, and you go to court and litigate it, and during the pendency of the proceedings, you are able to convince the court that Travelers has acted in bad faith, hidden documents, do this, do that. The court even go so far as to issue sanctions against Travelers, and ultimately you win and get your new roof. Plus you got the sanctions because they were hiding things from you. It just seems to me that all those arguments are subsumed in the judgment of the case where the bad conduct took place. And that after you got your new roof and after you got sanctions for them acting badly, you wouldn't then be able to run to district court and file a new case.
I believe we would.
What's the closest one to your case that I can go read and say, gosh, this seems really close?
Right. I was hoping to save some time for rebuttal, but I'd like to.
I'll give you a minute.
Okay. But I'd like to answer your question.
Yeah.
So under the factual scenario that you gave me, we would have a claim under the Colorado Unreasonable Delay Denial Act, right? Which says just because you eventually get the benefits does not mean that the bad faith has been cured. So we would have a claim under that statute, and then we'd also have
Is there a case that's been decided under that statute that I would look at it and say, wow, that's really close to the facts that are being argued here today?
Your Honor, I'm simply not in a position to come up with a case right
okay,
now.
Okay, that's
tell
fine.
You that.
I just wondered if one was on the top of your head.
There's not. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's why we have four very bright young minds that work for us. Maybe they can find one.
Thank you.
Thanks.
No pressure, though.
Yeah.
We'll hear from these fellows.
Actually, we have 12 among the three of us. But who's counting?
Excuse me. May it please the court, my name is Evan Stevenson, and I represent Travelers in this case. The court should affirm Judge Domenico's summary judgment order and prevent the creation of an entirely new category of bad faith litigation in this state that has never been previously recognized. If the plaintiff's theory is adopted by this court, then for the first time in the state of Colorado, it will be possible for workers' compensation claimants who are owed no benefits to nevertheless relitigate that question under the guise of a bad faith claim in federal court simply by filing a new lawsuit and saying, the proceeding was unfair to me. I should have won if you hadn't cheated. That kind of litigation does not exist in Colorado. As far as I know, this is the first attempt to do this. All of the examples that I'm aware of bad faith claims brought against workers' compensation insurers that are premised on coverage like this one are ones where the claimant won in the workers' compensation courts. They established that there was coverage, that they were owed benefits, and that there was some kind of, and then they go on to allege that there's some kind of wrongdoing associated with that claim. But if the court, for the first time, allows someone who is not owed any benefits to then sue in federal court and raise all the same issues of coverage plus more, there will be the courts will be very busy. I mean, everyone who loses could then just file a federal lawsuit and say, well, the reason I lost, the reason I didn't get coverage is because you enforced the rules of evidence against me.
But they claim they won. He says he won.
Because
of the dime.
Okay. Now I understand what you're saying.
Ultimately,
Judge.
He won.
Yes. I'm happy to go straight to that issue. So there are a number of problems with that argument. The first is, under this court's precedent, putting something in one line in a brief and then a string cite and a footnote is not enough to develop that argument. We contend it's waived. Second, that issue of to whom it was given to determine coverage or causation in this case, that was litigated in the underlying case. That went up to the ICAP, to the Industrial Claim Appeals Office, and that appellate panel ruled that in this instance it's given to the ALJ to determine causation and coverage. I mean, so that issue also was resolved.
They say that was dicta. Why isn't that dicta?
Well, I think based on the arguments we have now, I think it's very clear it's essential to that decision because later on there was a dime, mainly related to his accepted mid-back injury. So the proceedings continued. It was very important to determine what a dime could determine later in that proceeding versus what the ALJ could determine. So I don't think it's dicta. It's absolutely essential to affirming Judge Kanishi's causation ruling. Excuse me. It's essential to affirming it to determine that he's the one who should be deciding it. I didn't even think they really explained why that's dicta. They just called it dicta. But you have to, if you're going to affirm something, you have to explain why it's given to that person to decide that question. So it was absolutely not dicta. So not only was it waived in the district court, but that exact issue was also litigated in the underlying case and is procedurally barred from being relitigated here. And then on the merits, the ICAP or the Industrial Claims Appeals Panel, they got the issue right. You know, the source of law that my friend is pointing to is a statute that says that a dime report gets presumptive weight over a dime's determination of MMI and of impairment ratings in MMI impairment rating cases. And that just, there is no such presumption in a non-lost time claim at the time MMI is determined. So,
well, he's arguing that it was a lost time claim because he had more than 3 days of lost time, but he was forced to give it to sick leave and his, assume annual leave.
Yeah, he's leaving out half of the rule. So what the ICAP said is that the ALJ determines causation when it's a non-lost time claim at the time MMI is first determined by an authorized treating physician. So I believe, I'm going off memory here, but I believe MMI was determined by Dr. McCauley, who's the authorized treating physician here, in May, I believe it was. And at that time, he had not missed any work. So I just think he's incorrect on the facts on that, Judge Bacharach. And then lastly, it is not given to a dime doctor to determine causation generally. What is given to a dime doctor under the statute is to determine MMI and impairment ratings. And what has happened to the law in Colorado is for a time there were a number of decisions like Cordova, like Egan, like Loprino Foods. They're cited by the other side's brief that gave effect to causation findings that were embedded within those things that are given to a dime. But then the Colorado Court of Appeals in 2019 clarified the limitations on that. So what was starting to happen was people were starting to think, what is being argued here? Oh, well, dimes just determine causation for everything. They trump everyone and everything. That is the argument that's being made here, that a dime is essentially the entire workers' compensation process. That's essentially what's being argued here. And what the Colorado Court of Appeals said in 2019, addressing those cases, addressing this exact argument, was that is wrong. That dimes do not trump everything else in the workers' compensation system. They're limited to MMI and impairment ratings. It's not the case that a causation inference embedded in there wipes out everything that comes before. I mean, that would be so impractical. Judge Baldock, I see you're raising your hand.
In the dime proceedings, which we have going on here, did the claimant ultimately get paid for his upper back and lower back injuries? Did he win? The question comes up, did he win? He argues he won. Well, you only win if you get paid for it.
Right. So I thought Judge Carson was saying he won based on the dime. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that's where, in other words, dime is argument, as I see it, is trumping everything in here. And that you can also have a bad faith and that he's wanting to punish you because you hid this. The question is, did he recover fully for all the claims of injuries to his back under the dime proceedings?
Yeah, so the claim settled when the dime was being challenged. So I'll tell you a little more about that. Not all of this is in the record, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. So Dr. Counts died. Dr. Counts died, and there was a challenge to his dime report that was pending in the administrative courts, and the parties just settled that claim. So I would say the answer is no. I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge.
Who settled with him? You say he didn't win an argument. He just settled the claim before dime. Did it include both the upper and the lower back?
It was a settlement of the whole claim. I would say that when someone settles a pending claim that's disputed, I wouldn't say that they won, no.
Okay, then if that's separate and settlement is incurred in regards to that, what prevents a separate cause of action for bad faith?
Oh, right. The thing that prevents the separate cause of action of bad faith is that my friend's entire theory pursued below, not necessarily what he's pursuing here, but what he pursued below was the idea that Travelers unreasonably denied this claim and that they owed him coverage and that the ALJ did reach the wrong conclusion and that it was all wrong.
He doesn't say unreasonable. He says you cheated. That's his word.
Yeah, he's going.
That's bad faith.
He's not using the language of the legal standard. That's true. And the thing that prevents that is that that ingredient that's essential, that's the nucleus of his bad faith claim, that there is coverage, was decided against him and finally decided against him in the underlying courts, and that that was appealed all the way up to the Colorado Supreme Court. It was all either affirmed or review denied, and there is no coverage. In fact, I heard him just say.
It seems like he has a little more nuanced argument than that. His argument seems to be coverage, no coverage, who cares? What happened in the work comp proceeding was Travelers did not disclose all the documents to my client and to our doctors, thereby infecting the proceedings with bad faith.
I agree. He's developing that more now here on appeal.
Right. Well, let's talk about what he's talking about today. We can talk about whether he waived it or not. You've already made that argument.
Yeah.
What do you say? Assume he hasn't. What do you say to that?
Assume he had preserved that argument.
Assume he preserved it, and maybe he did.
Yeah, I think that so that would be another new category of bad faith litigation that I don't think has ever existed in Colorado. The idea that I can just say that you tainted the underlying proceedings procedurally, and even if I really am not owed any coverage, just because the process was unfair to me, I still get to sue you for bad faith. That would be extremely unusual.
Well, isn't that sort of what bad faith is about? That I'm litigating against you and I'm paying fees. I don't know what his arrangement was. But let's assume I'm paying fees, and because you're acting in bad faith and hiding documents from me and not giving my treating physicians and my experts all the documents that you have that bear on the decision, it cost me a lot of money that I wouldn't have otherwise spent if you'd have just turned those over in the first place. Maybe I would have settled early or given up.
What I would say is that bad faith is not about bringing lawsuits about prior lawsuits where that allegedly happened. And what I would say is, to the extent that he thinks that they thought that the underlying proceeding, that Travelers was acting unfairly and somehow cheating or doing terrible things, the remedy is in that proceeding.
The work comp court give a remedy for that?
Oh yeah. Workers' compensation courts can punish bad conduct in front of them. They can issue sanctions. They can, yes, of course. Yes, they can. I don't believe he's ever contended otherwise. The threat of infinite regress is real. I mean, what if this is allowed and then we somehow win this case, why can't he just file another one after that and say,
can I test that a little bit?
Sure.
You said several times that this would be unprecedented, that this would really unleash infinite remedies. In every other context other than workers' comp, we have bad faith claims all of the time that are inherently predicated on a contract, an insurance contract, and yet it's, I think, pretty well established beyond any argument that there can be the bad faith delay in a claim, even if it was ultimately correctly denied, or that there was conduct that involving the administration, the processing of the claim, that gave rise to some damage that was not necessarily compensable through breach of contract, like emotional distress. But your argument is that workers' comp is different than all of these other areas, and bad faith is incompatible, with an ultimate adjudication that the contract, the workers' insurance obligation, was correctly denied. What makes workers' comp so unique in that regard?
So, Judge, respectfully, I would say it's the opposite. Okay. I'd say we're arguing for the regular principles of bad faith, and they're arguing for that workers' comp is different. And we should be able to bring a whole new separate lawsuit about this. So the examples you're giving, Judge Bacharach, of, say, an unreasonable delay of a claim, all those things are brought in the one bad faith lawsuit, and the unreasonable delay is usually not associated with a prior proceeding where you have remedies. That's out-of-court conduct, and then you bring that out-of-court conduct into court in one lawsuit. And by the way, if they think that the litigation is being pursued improperly, there are some narrow avenues for pursuing bad faith litigation conduct, but it's done in that case. So I don't think that's an unusual principle of law at all, that if you think there's misconduct going on in your case, you raise it in that case. I don't think that's limited to bad faith. I think that's across the board. What is unusual is to say, for bad faith alone, we're going to let you file a whole other separate lawsuit and just say that the prior proceeding was cheating and unfair.
So is it your position that in the workers' comp case, he could have somehow amended his complaint and asked for bad faith damages?
No. To be clear, I'm not saying he should have tried to bring a bad faith claim in the underlying case. I'm saying that the stuff he said was cheating, he could have had a remedy for. That's what I'm saying. And what was precluded.
So you're saying that the bad faith has to occur outside the case. That if you got bad faith going on in the work comp case, you got to take it up there. If there's other bad faith going on, you can file a separate lawsuit.
What I'm saying is if there's cheating going on or some terrible conduct going on, you remedy it in that case. And if for some reason you have a bad faith remedy for what happens in that case, like they deny coverage unreasonably, and coverage is, I mean, actually, if there's cheating, it would be established in that case. It would, and then I suppose theoretically you could then include it in your bad faith case later if it's established. But Your Honor, I see I'm 10 seconds over my time.
You can answer.
I was pretty much done, but okay. I'll just conclude by saying thank you, Your Honors, but the court should not create multiple new categories of bad faith litigation in this context. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel, did you have
any? No, I don't have anything else.
I did have just kind of one follow-up question. Now, he does argue, I think it's starting on page 52 of his opening brief, that Travelers did commit bad faith after the ALJ's decision. How could that be encompassed within the ALJ's decision if his claim is predicated on something that hadn't even taken place by then?
Yeah, so all of those claims are still premised on the idea that he's owed coverage, right? All of them. So in the underlying case, they made the argument that Travelers did all these things and therefore I didn't get paid for my lower back injury. And whether it's before or after the ALJ's decision, it's still a necessary ingredient in that claim that he's actually owed coverage. So it doesn't make it, they can't just say, you did more bad things, and then now, you know, we're back to square one. Are there any other questions I can answer for Your Honors?
No, I think that's it. Thank you so much. All right, I think I promised you a minute.
You did, thank you, and I'll be brief. I'm not asking this court to expand and create a new line of bad faith cases. This matter has been squarely addressed by our Colorado Supreme Court in Brodeur and Savio, which said bad faith tort claims are distinct and separate actions available to workers' compensation claimants in addition to remedies under the Workers' Compensation Act. The resolution of bad faith tort claims is independent from the resolution of workers' compensation claims. Your Honor, this is squarely what Brodeur and Savio contemplated, that there was a workers' compensation claim over here, and that if there's bad faith, it needs to be litigated separately. The administrative courts don't even have jurisdiction.
Can we give him a little extra time so I can quiz him here?
Anything you want.
Okay. It seems to me there's a difference between bad faith within the litigation itself and bad faith in the claims process. And it seems to me that what you're just arguing about is bad faith within the litigation.
Our claim involves both.
So your position is that in litigation, if somebody is engaged in dastardly conduct, that is separately actionable through a bad faith proceeding?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And that's akin to, you know, it'd be like Lance Armstrong coming in before Your Honors and insisting that he remains the winner of the Tour de France, that he's still the champion. Never mind the fact that he cheated and took steroids to do it. He's just saying, I won, and that's all you look at. The law is different. The duty of good faith and fair dealing says the process does matter. And if you taint the process, the outcome is tainted.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of your stuff. Like one of the things, Judge Bacharach brought up page 52 of your brief here. And it says they continue to engage in bad faith, and it says one of them was by interfering with the dime, by initially agreeing the dime would control over ALJ Kinesi's order, only to later argue the opposite by trying to prevent him from undergoing a dime and delaying the dime for over 2 years. It just seems that that is ripe for abuse, that kind of argument, because it strips away, you're not saying they don't have a right to contest the dime, to suggest that the dime was medically inappropriate, to, I mean, there may be a lot of arguments why even though they agreed a dime can go forward, maybe they object to the doctor who was going to conduct the dime. Seems like we would be opening the door wide open in that situation in particular for people if somebody said, oh yeah, well obviously we're going to have a dime later, and then they contest the procedure or they contest something about it, then next thing you know, you got a bad faith claim.
I have no problem with them contesting the procedure within the rules. The workers' compensation rules give them the right to challenge the dime, and they did that. That's not part of our bad faith claim. What is, however, is they said, yep, you get the dime. Then he requested the dime, and then for 2 years, they said, no, you don't get a dime. They made the same issue preclusion argument in the workers' compensation proceeding that they made here. They said, ALJ Kinesi's ruling is the end of the matter. He doesn't get a dime. Two ALJs said, no way. He's statutorily guaranteed a dime. And that's what they interfered with for over 2 years.
Well, maybe that's a frivolous argument that the workers' comp proceedings can deal with in the form of sanctions, but I still don't see how it's separately actionable.
Because it's inconsistent with the duty of good faith and fair dealing. They knew he had a right to a dime.
Well, they don't have a contractual duty to litigate with you in good faith.
No, but they have an obligation to handle the claim in good faith. And part of a workers' compensation claim, Your Honor, a key part is the dime process.
It's also part of your litigation in the workers' comp proceeding, wasn't it?
It is, and I have no problem with them litigating the dime within the confines of the rules. It's when they go outside of the rules that it becomes bad faith.